the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey number 48 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring a double feature of spooky tales with Penny Whistle by Greg Van Eekhout and The Scottish Scene by Rish Outfield. These two stories have a lot in common, some of which I will get to later, but the first similarity is that both of these stories have been podcasted elsewhere. I usually try to avoid stories which have already been podcasted, but once in a while, I think it is worth it. I first heard Penny Whistle in the first year of the Escape Pod podcast, which was amazingly 7 years ago, and this story has always stuck with me. It is dark and somewhat violent, so be warned, but it is also highly creative and fun, in a demented sort of way. Greg Van Eekhout writes short stories and novels for adult and kid audiences. His first novel, Norse Code, is an urban fantasy about Ragnarok in modern-day L.A. Kid vs. Squid is a middle-grade novel about the survivors of Atlantis washing up on the shores of an old California beach town. The Boy at the End of the World, an Andre Norton Award finalist, is about the last human on Earth in search of human survivors. The paperback edition of The Boy at the End of the World will be released in the middle of this month. Greg is currently working on the second book in a trilogy based on his short story, The Osteomancer's Son, and the first volume of which will be released by Tor Books in fall of 2013. For more information, you can always visit his website at www.writingandsnacks.com. But now, come with me, and let's journey into panic and poise.
Penny Whistle by Greg Van Eekhout. You always have to keep your eye on single men who hang around playgrounds. I spotted him sitting by himself at a picnic table by the water fountain, and I watched him while Nathan played with his cars in the sandbox. The guy actually seemed okay. Fresh-faced, a little older than college-aged, dressed in khakis and a nice tweed sports coat. He was probably only trying to enjoy a sunny day in the park, just like us moms and our kids. But then I saw him reach into his blazer. I saw the glint of metal.
"Piper!"
I screamed, fumbling in my purse. Too late. He brought his pipe to his lips and blew a note that almost made my eyeglasses shatter. Over at the sandbox, Nathan rose to his feet. He started moving towards the man. All the children did. The piper's notes bounced off the tree boughs, and I saw Nathan break into a trot. He was thoroughly hooked. Some of the moms panicked and forgot their training. It's easy to do. They rushed for their kids, grabbing at little hands and arms, trying to put their bodies between their kids and the piper. You can't blame them. That's just instinct. I averted my eyes. I don't like to see blood under the best of circumstances. My hands found the penny whistle in my purse. It was just a cheapie I got for free at Nathan's school. A police officer had given us a big scare talk and then handed us penny whistles and spent a few minutes showing us how to play them. I covered the 6 holes with my fingers. You had to make sure to fully cover the holes. I tried blowing, but my tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth. I licked my lips. I tried again. My tone sounded airy and weak. The piper played with one hand, the other grasping for the kids who had almost reached him. Nathan was near the front of the group. I wanted to throw the penny whistle down, to run to Nathan, gather him in my arms. It's just instinct. But that would have doomed my son. I played, joining my notes with those of the few other moms who'd kept their heads. When a piper strikes, hooking a child, there's only one way to stop him. You can't take your child back by force. The piper's music hooks too deeply. Nathan had to go to the piper, and I couldn't unhook him. I could only change his intent. I played the whistle, just as the cop had taught me. A few more moms remembered their training and joined in. When Nathan and the other kids reached the piper, I forced myself to watch until the sound of his pipe was replaced by the sound of his screams. When it was over, Nathan was soaked in blood, all over his clothes, in his hair, under his nails. He smiled at me. His teeth were smeared in blood.
"Pretty music," he said.
A tasty take on a classic fairy tale. Well, maybe tasty isn't the right word. But if you liked this story, and or you want to hear something a bit more on the lighter side, you should head on over to podcastle.org and check out Greg's Halloween story, We Clever Jacks, that I narrated over there. It was a really fun story to read, and will definitely put you in the mood for Halloween. But back to Penny Whistle. It was narrated for you by the lovely voice of Renee Chambliss, with a little help from her son, Skazhanky S. Carlo. Renee Chambliss is a writer and professional audiobook narrator who lives in Northern California. You can find out more about her at rechambliss.com, and I'll definitely put that in the show notes. And that brings us to the second thing that these two stories have in common, because our next story also features Renee as the voice of several characters. The Scottish Scene was written by Rish Outfield, who provides several voices for this story as well. Not much is officially known about the criminal known as Rish Outfield. Some say he was born bad and was always bent on world domination. Some say he was once an innocent, with the same kind of dreams of being a writer, husband, and silent film cowboy that we all share. Some say he's a podcaster and host of the Doonstief Audio Fiction magazine, trying his best to entertain despite a million reasons and 6 parsec losses telling him to stop. Some say his true motives can never be known. Not on this planet, anyway. Only I, Marshall Tiberius Latham, know the truth. But that sad tale, my friends, is for another day. Wait a minute. Tiberius? I must be tired. Everyone knows my middle name is Noonien. Rish wrote this story as the entrance into a contest for the Masters of the Macabre, which assigned him the prompt of The Curse of Macbeth. And I really liked what he did with it. So, I thought I would bring all you along for the journey. So, join me once again, and let's journey into the dangers of extra credit.
The Scottish Scene by Rish Outfield. Read by Renee Chambliss and the author. When Samantha Jenkins got her midterm exam back from Mr. Palmer, she knew she was in trouble. She'd gotten a C-, and that meant she wouldn't be getting a B in language arts. No B, no trip to San Diego in July. Sammy's best friend, Lee Bennett, must have realized the same thing, because she made a whimpering, disconsolate sound from her desk 2 rows back. Mr. Palmer smiled.
If any of you are concerned about the impact these scores have on your final grade, let me remind you of the opportunity for extra credit. Each 2-page book report is worth 5 extra points, and each presentation or dramatic reading is worth 20.
Sammy thought about it. 20 extra midterm points would bring her to an A- and make her life infinitely easier for the rest of the semester. A couple of students had done dramatic readings in class. Tyler Delmonico had performed a scene from Pulp Fiction one infamous afternoon, and it didn't seem so hard. She spoke to Lee about it and approached Mr. Palmer after class. She asked if a dramatic reading could be given by teams, since Lee was afraid to do it by herself. He chuckled.
Actually, that's the point of the assignment. Did you know that most people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of death?
Samantha blinked.
No,
Sammy said.
Sure, you can do it together, the teacher said finally. What are you going to be reading?
I don't know yet.
Tell me on Friday. And might I suggest Shakespeare, not Quentin Tarantino?
Lee was waiting for Sammy in the hallway. Tosh April, their tall, well-developed classmate, was standing beside her.
He said we can do it together,
Sammy said.
Hey, Tosh wants to do it too,
Lee said.
Everybody on the squad has to have a C average,
she explained.
Or we can't cheer.
Tosh and her kind lived for the cheerleading squad. It really surprised Sammy that there would be a scholarly requirement for a group of dumb pom-pom shakers.
Can we do a 3-person scene?
Tosh asked.
I don't know,
Sammy said.
Mr. Palmer wants it to be from Shakespeare. I call Juliet,
Lee said.
You want to be Romeo, Sammy? I don't want to play the boy. Fine, we can all be Juliet or Hamlet or Scrooge or something.
Tosh wrinkled her nose. It made her even look more adorable than usual.
Shakespeare is lame.
Sammy sighed.
I'll ask my uncle. Maybe he knows a scene that isn't lame.
Sammy's Uncle Rod lived in Greenwich Village and sometimes did theater. She suspected he was gay, but had never dared ask him or her mother. He answered on the first ring. Samantha, how goes suburbia? He asked cheerfully.
Fine.
And youthful ignorance? How's that treating you?
It's good, I guess.
You really have no idea.
She described the assignment and asked his opinion.
But it has to be for 3 of us.
Uncle Rod was delighted to hear it. Baby, you've got to do the witch speech from the Scottish play.
No, it's supposed to be Shakespeare.
Allah forgive the next generation, her uncle muttered. The Scottish play is Shakespeare.
He spelled its name.
Macbeth?
Yes, but there's a tradition not to say the name. Bad luck.
Okay, what's the scene?
Well, you know, by the pricking of my thumbs, he began, as if that would mean something to her. Something wicked this way comes. Anyway, it's online, easy to find. Just cut out the parts with what's-his-name and the king.
The next day, the 3 would-be witches met at Lee's house right after school, looking at their printouts and marking their parts with a pink highlighter.
Hey,
Tosh whined.
Mine's not in English.
Sammy sighed.
That's just how Shakespeare is. Sorry. Besides, we don't have to memorize it. Just read it. I don't know, guys. In front of the whole class? Tosh, you flash your baby maker in front of the whole school every time there's an assembly.
Sammy said.
This should be a piece of cake.
This silenced the cheerleader for a moment. Lee jumped in.
What's the scene about? Witches casting a spell. It's the most famous scene from Macbeth. Never heard of it,
the cheerleader said.
But I saw a movie that said he didn't even write the plays. And I saw a movie that said he wrote them for Gwyneth Paltrow.
Sammy growled.
Can we read the scene, please?
All three read,
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
That sounds like a poem,
Tush observed.
It's a kind of poetry,
Lee said.
Icelandic parameter or something,
Sammy said, marking the first witch's lines on her sheet.
Liver of blaspheming Jew, gall of goat, and slips of you?
Tush read.
This is gross, but worth 20 points on the midterm.
Then Sammy remembered something.
Oh, my uncle told me to call it the Scottish play, not Macbeth. Why not Macbeth?
Lee wondered.
It's bad luck or something. To call it Macbeth? Is that not its name? Yeah, but never mind. I don't understand. It says Macbeth right here in my lines. I said never mind. Mine says Macduff,
Tush said. Somehow they made it through the reading. It wasn't a long scene on paper, but it took forever to get through it the first time. Just shy of forever the second time. The cheerleader was dying to answer her cell phone, so Sammy declared they had studied enough. They'd do their dramatic reading on Monday. But Friday, everything seemed to go wrong. That morning, Sammy bit into a cookie with peanut butter in it instead of oatmeal. She spat it out and rinsed out her mouth as soon as she knew. Even so, her lips got swollen and her throat constricted. Then she had to ride the bus because Lee's alarm clock hadn't gone off and couldn't drive her to school. She had a mishap on the bus, too. At school, the usually perfect-looking Tosh had a weird splotch on her forehead she had tried, unsuccessfully, to cover with makeup. It turned out she got burned with the curling iron, which became red-hot 1 second after plugging it into the wall. Lee didn't arrive until first period was over. She'd gotten a flat tire on Locust Lane. Sammy could commiserate.
I fell down the steps getting off the bus this morning. I thought my shoes were untied, but they were fine.
Lee pointed out a black spot on her left knee where blood had soaked through.
How hard did you fall? Pretty hard. Eric Choner had to help me up. He grabbed my boob when he did. That was no accident,
Lee said as they walked through the hall together.
Experience talking. When it rains, it pu-
Sammy started to say, when a locker suddenly hit Lee in the face.
Ow!
A skinny sophomore was walking the other way, taking no notice. Somehow he had slammed closed his locker, the door had hit an eraser, and bounced back with enough force to give Lee a bloody nose. Sammy maneuvered her to the girls' room, where half the tissues went against her nostrils, and the other half went to wipe away her bloody lips and chin.
Maybe now I could get that nose job I wanted,
Lee muttered.
Open locks,
someone said behind her. Sammy looked around.
Whoever knocks,
came a voice from within the farthest stall.
What is it?
Lee asked, her head tilted back. Sammy walked over and pushed open the door. No one was there. She turned to tell her friend, then started. She and Lee were in the girls' room, as well as a third person. An old woman was standing at the entrance to the restroom, but only on the mirror side.
What?
Lee all but screamed.
There's a...
Sammy started to say, but there was no one in the mirror anymore.
I thought I saw a woman.
But the more accurate description would have been a witch.
How's my nose look?
Lee asked, removing the tissue. It looked like a bloody mess, but Sammy didn't say this. Instead, she asked,
Can I borrow your phone?
Uncle Rod didn't answer until the sixth ring. Afternoon, he said, hesitating.
Uncle Rod, it's me, Sammy.
Oh, I didn't recognize the number. How goes it, kiddo?
Remember what you said about the Scottish play? That it was bad luck to say the name?
Yeah, you know how superstitious theater bugs are.
Sammy kept glancing nervously at the mirror, afraid to look, but afraid to look away.
What happens if you say the name? How does the bad luck work?
Oh, well, the story goes that Shakespeare used real spells when he wrote it, and the witches he stole them from cursed the play. Cute, right?
Not at all,
Sammy said.
How do you break the curse?
Well, it's just a myth, kidlet. It's just tradition not to
say... But what if you said it anyway? How do you get uncursed?
Oh, don't know about that. Jeffrey would know, though. I can ask him next time I see him.
Uncle Rod, could you do it now and call me back? As soon as you can?
Is everything all right, Samantha?
Please, Rod, could you do that for me?
All right, but just because it's you, anybody else gets my voicemail.
Sammy didn't know what that meant and didn't care. She thanked him and hung up, emerging from the restroom. She wasn't sure what to do now. Just go sit in geography, waiting for a cell phone call she couldn't take in class? She jumped as a door slammed from behind her. But when she looked, the hall was empty. On her right, the motor inside the drinking fountain began to whine, like something was broken inside. She moved away from it. Instead of going to class, she went down to the library. They had free internet in there. She sat down at one of their ancient computers and did a Google search for Break Curse of Macbeth. Sammy clicked on the first of several articles. Someone had written all about the play, the curse, and how to break it. 1. Light a candle. 2. Turn 3 times. 3. Recite a single line of Shakespeare. So simple, it was almost childish. A shadow moved over Sammy, and she knew the librarian was checking up on her, as usual. But a voice rasped,
"Seek to know no more."
In the reflection of her monitor, Sammy saw the face of an ancient old woman, her hair thin and wild, her eyes like embers in a dying fire. She gasped, but when she turned, no one was there. Of course. She returned to the screen, but it had gone dark. All the computers had turned off. The phone in her pocket began to vibrate. Despite all the supernatural mayhem occurring, she still glanced around for the librarian before removing the cell phone. It was her uncle's number calling.
"Hey, kidlet."
"Did you find out how to break the curse?"
"Well, there's not really a curse. It's just a little tradition."
"Did you talk to your boyfriend or not?"
she snapped.
"Jeffrey's not my boyfriend," Rod said, no more humor in his voice. "At least not yet."
"Did he tell you to read a line from another play?"
"Yes, how'd you know?"
"What was the line?"
she asked, getting more nervous.
He said the one they used was Angels and Ministers of Grace Defend Us, but that you could use any—
"Thanks, Uncle Rod. I'll explain later."
And she hung up. Sammy told Lee's algebra TA the school nurse wanted to talk to Lee Bennett about her nosebleed, getting her out of class easily.
"We're cursed, Lee,"
Sammy said as soon as they were alone.
"Are you still freaking out?" "Yes, and you should be too. It's the curse of the Scottish play." "Come on, Sammy. You don't believe in all the—"
Lee started to say, then fell silent. She was staring down the hall beyond her friend.
"Did you see that?" "What?"
Obviously, there was nothing there now.
"A woman,"
Sammy said.
"A witch."
It was not a question. Lee only nodded.
"I know how to break the curse. What do we—"
Lee began, then abruptly stumbled. A thread of carpet had snagged her shoe, almost tripping her. She took a step, then sucked in air, painfully. She had twisted her ankle.
"Today is officially the worst day of my—"
"Do you have any candles?"
"You know I do,"
Lee said, wincing with each step.
"In the car."
Lee kept a bunch of scented candles to hide the smell of cigarettes from her parents.
"In your glove compartment?"
"Yes. Maybe you should go. My ankle is really messed up."
So Sammy went. Her knee aching from her earlier tumble, she ran as fast as she dared go. With a curse hanging above her head, she had to watch her every step, across the high school and out to the student parking lot. She scanned the lot for her friend's car, finding it easily. No bad luck there. The doors were all locked. The keys were still in the ignition. But Lee always locked her keys in her car and had an emergency key in the back wheel well. Sammy found it, opened the door and glove box, and grabbed 2 scented candles, along with Lee's lighter. As she rose, she felt a hand on her shoulder and stiffened.
"Come, light shadows,"
the witch hissed. The car next to her's alarm began to sound.
"So depart."
No one was standing there. Of course. Lee finally made it outside, hobbling like a crippled child. Sammy met her halfway. Right there in the parking lot, she lit the candles, handing one to her friend. Somewhere in the distance, a dog began to howl. It made Samantha's blood go cold.
"Okay, hold the candle, turn 3 times, and say, 'Angels and ministers of grace defend us.'"
"While we're turning? I don't know. Let's just try it."
A cloud moved over the sun, momentarily darkening the sky. More car alarms began to blare. They were going to get caught out there. Hot wax dribbled onto Lee's hand, and she yelped and shook her fingers. Her candle went out. Sammy handed her the other candle.
"Do it."
Lee spun in a circle, nearly toppling, and said,
"Angels and ministers, defend us."
Her nose was beginning to bleed again.
"Of grace. Defend us of grace. No, angels and ministers of grace, defend us."
As Lee began to say the phrase, a wasp flew between them and landed on her eyelid. Lee froze. She was deathly afraid of wasps.
"Finish the line,"
Sammy ordered, and as soon as Lee got the words out, the insect took off.
"My turn."
But as her friend started passing the candle to her, it too blew out.
"Damn."
Sammy swore and made a cup with her hand in the lighter. Lee lit the candle again, then passed it to her as delicately as possible. Without another hesitation, Sammy spun three times, saying the line from Hamlet. The candle did not go out, but the car alarms in the parking lot all did. All was well. Whatever the feeling she'd been having, it was gone now.
"I think that's that,"
Sammy said.
"You sure?"
The air felt different, more peaceful somehow.
"Yeah."
They went back into the school. Lee told her that her ankle didn't hurt so badly anymore. Her nose had stopped bleeding, and she now had a story to tell.
"But what about Palmer's class? The extra credit? San Diego?"
Sammy shrugged.
"Forget the Scottish play. We'll just do a bunch of book reports."
Lee didn't complain.
"Tosh will be happy to hear that."
Sammy froze in her tracks.
"Tosh, she has to do the ritual."
Lee's eyes widened.
"She's still cursed. What class does she have now?" "Something in the gym."
Sammy nodded.
"You go back to class. I'll take a candle and make sure she breaks the curse. She won't believe you. I'll make her believe."
Lee handed her friend the hall pass and headed back to algebra. Tosh wasn't in the gym. Several girls were inside playing volleyball and pointed Sammy in the right direction. Tosh was in the west hallway, standing on a ladder, hanging up a banner promoting next week's bake sale. She was alone, humming that Gautier song, thinking about cheers and boys and next year's uniforms. But when Samantha came around the corner, she was not alone.
"Tosh!"
Sammy cried. But it was too late. The witch gave Sammy a triumphant wave and gave the ladder a hard shove. From the other end of the hall, Sammy watched the ladder topple. Tosh fell forward, trying to catch herself. Instead, the banner caught her right under the chin. She stopped in the air for just a moment, then fell backward, struggling, as the rope holding the banner held her in the air by the neck. It was a 100-to-1 fluke accident. She'd stopped kicking by the time Sammy got to her, her legs swinging like a pendulum in the non-existent breeze. Tasha April had no need for extra credit now, Sammy thought. Like in a Shakespeare tragedy, hers had been a life full of hope for the future, signifying nothing.
Quite a fun tale, huh? Although it didn't go so well for everyone. Well, just goes to show you, when you're dealing with witches, you've got to watch your Tosh. Actually, this story kind of reminds me of one of those direct TV commercials. When you get bad grades in school, you have to do extra credit assignments. When you have to do extra credit assignments, you and your friends get cursed by reciting the name of a classic play. When you and your friends get cursed by reciting the name of a classic play, one of your friends will end up dead, hanging from a bake sale banner in the gym. Don't let one of your friends end up dead, hanging from a bake sale banner in the gym. Don't get bad grades in school. And study hard. You know, actually, growing up, I was never that scared of witches. I never took them too seriously. And I guess I don't really take them too seriously now, either. I'm not one of those people who is against things like Harry Potter and the general fun around witches or magic. And I know there's people that follow Wicca and quote-unquote witches in our modern society, but I guess I've just never associated that with the type of witches that we're supposed to be scared of in Halloween stories. But I must say that if witches did exist now in that way, as a parent, the whole idea of witches luring children away to steal from their life essence or whatever, you know, affects me in a completely different way than it did when I was a kid. If you've ever seen Disney's Hocus Pocus, which is a fun movie and there's nothing to be worried about in that movie, but there is a part near the end when one of the witches, I think it was Sarah Jessica Parker, flies through the air and she sings this song that lures all the children and they start walking in a trance toward the witch's house out in the country, and she's calling them to her, and they basically want to steal the life essence from the children. And always at that part, I have a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of fear that somebody could entrance my children and steal them from me like that. So I guess that's another indirect way that these two stories are linked. In the first story, we have the Pied Piper trying to lure the children away. And in the second, you have witches who, in some stories and scenarios, want your children too, whether to steal their life essence or even to eat them, like in Hansel and Gretel. Or maybe they just have a shoe fetish and want to get a hold of your snazzy ruby slippers. So, do you want to hear my real-life witch story? It's actually not that big a deal, but I remember once in high school that I was in class and I found a piece of paper on the floor. And I picked it up and I opened it and started to read it. And it was a description of a ritual or a spell to make someone fall in love with you. And it involved candles and repeated mantras and items belonging to the target person and certain things that must be said or done to this person in order for the spell to work. And as I was reading it, the girl in the desk next to me saw what I was reading and she snatched it away from me. And she had a concerned look on her face and was pretty serious. And I don't know, I can't remember. She said something along the lines of, "You're too good to be getting involved with anything like this." And, you know, she didn't say it as an insult, but I got the impression that she was trying to protect me from something and didn't want me to get involved with the spell or anything like that. And I always thought that was kind of strange. And, you know, just remembering her, you know, she's a nice enough girl, but she was kind of on the wild side, or somebody that was different and more extravagant than normal. And I guess I could picture her as being involved in some weird things like that. At least that was my perspective at the time. I don't know if I met her today how she would be or what I would think of her, but I always wonder, whenever I think of that, I think, well, was she a witch? Was that her spell that she wrote? You know, I pretty much chalk it up to teenage nonsense, but you know, there's always been that part of me that wonders. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this double feature and these stories. And I, of course, want to remind you of the Edgar Allan Poe Writing Contest, where you can write a story that's 2,500 words or less, that borrows the title from one of Poe's stories or poems, and make your own tale with a Poe feel to it. The deadline for the contest is November 1st, and you can find the submission guidelines by going to the forums at journeyinto.freeforums.com and going to the announcements from Basecamp section. I also put a link to it on the blog page for the podcast, which is at journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com. And while you're there, take a look at the donation options that are there. And if you feel like making a donation to the podcast, that would be much appreciated and would help facilitate me paying authors for their stories. I hope you're enjoying your October. And I hope you'll join me next week as we journey into another classic story inside a lighthouse. Until then, fellow journeyers, journey on. The Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. This means that you can share it with whomever you would like. But if you try to sell it, or you try to change it, you'll be cursed for the rest of your life. The music for today's podcast has been provided by Man in Space, and soundtracks for the non-existing movies. And I did throw a little Rush in there, just for Greg's benefit.